Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
So the Paul Ryan House Republican budget released yesterday proposes to turn Medicare into a voucher system. They call it premium support, tear new holes in the safety net for the poor, and reduce the top tax rate to 25%. It'll never pass as is. It's a campaign year platform for the GOP, but it's also a campaign opportunity for President Obama, who has been setting up for his reelection the last 2 years by taking on the Tea Party. Now, David Corn, Washington bureau chief for Mother Jones, has a new book called Showdown, the inside story of how Obama fought back against Boehner, Cantor, and the Tea Party. He's really a perfect guest for this day after the Ryan budget was announced to see how it plays into the president's political wheelhouse. So, David Corn, welcome back to WNYC.
Oh, it's great to be back, Brian.
The president and congressional Democrats took that shellacking by the Tea Party in 2010, the midterm elections. A backlash that cost the Democrats their House majority. Your book says the president and his political team then devised a secret trap for the conservative new House. What was the trap?
If you remember back to the budget fights last year over the deficit and the 2011 budget, it was really sort of bare knuckles politics. And at the beginning of the year, when the president was sort of assessing where he stood politically vis-a-vis the new House under the control of the Tea Party and John Boehner and Eric Cantor, had to sort of figure out how to proceed. David Plouffe, one of the president's chief strategists, the president himself and others, came up with a strategy of basically letting Republicans be Republicans. They had to put out a budget first for the next, it would cover really a 10-year period, but they put out a placeholder budget, one that had some deficit reduction in it, but not really a lot, not as much as the president would end up proposing in the grand bargain later in the year. What they really wanted to do was to let the Republicans go first. Why? Because Paul Ryan, who at that point became the chairman of the House Budget Committee, a Republican, had already put out a blueprint of his own indicating what he would do as budget chairman. And that included a very revolutionary change in Medicare. People remember from last year the big fuss about this, which would end the Medicare guarantee. You go to your doctor, the doctor gets paid by the federal government, in essence, for whatever services he provides you, as long as they're necessary, and he's paid according to a schedule set up by the government. Instead of that, you would basically get a premium. You get a voucher, or they would pay half of your premiums or a portion of your premiums to go find a doctor of your own. They wouldn't pay the doctor him or herself. It wouldn't be guaranteed. And
that's the new version announced yesterday, too, with the exception that the new version includes a public option. Yeah. That is, people could stay in traditional Medicare if they choose.
And the average, it would cost the average senior citizen, average elderly recipient of Medicare, about $6,000 a year. And the whole essence here of the plan last year and the plan that was just released, the revised Ryan plan, is to take the bill off the federal government and give it to you, the senior citizen, but in return you get freedom. That is the chance to find the insurance plan out there that you'd like and to work with and to deal with the insurance company rather than dealing just with your doctor who deals with Medicare. So back to the secret strategy, the idea was to sort of basically lay back, lay low, not do a lot in deficit reduction, and let poor Ryan and the Republicans act like Republicans go first.
And look too extreme to many Americans.
And that's indeed what happened last year. And you had this whole debate, which feeds into this election, of values. What are we as a country? Do we want to support the safety net? Do we want to give tax breaks to millionaires to fund, basically, and have that cut in revenue funded by savings in Medicare? Because that's basically if you took out the tax breaks to that the Ryan plan wanted last year and this year, you wouldn't need these Medicare savings. And these savings are not – it's a sort of a misnomer. They're not savings. They're pass-alongs, passing costs from the government to senior citizens, to Medicare recipients.
Well, I want to come back to whether we wouldn't need it anyway in some way.
Well, yeah. I was being glib there.
There's a very steep Medicare rate of growth. And also, just to not unduly scare anybody, I want to make very clear that the Ryan plan as it's proposed, even if it were ever to become law, does not affect anybody on Medicare today. This would only be for people who are 55 and younger right now when they go on Medicare in the future. So anybody who's made nervous by this idea that you might get kicked off traditional Medicare, that is definitely not in the plan. I just want to...
That's right. It affects people like me. And I tell you, when I'm in my 10 years or 20 years from now, I do not want to have to be dealing with insurance companies for my health care needs if I can avoid it.
So back to the politics and the trap. You say the White House knew they would take criticism on their placeholder budget, on not really going after the Ryan budget, from both deficit hawks and their progressive allies.
Because at the same time, the Republicans were proposing first $100 billion and then $61 billion in cuts to social programs just in the 2011 budget, which is different than the Ryan budget plan, which covers the budget for the next 10 years, sort of sets the overarching parameters. And Obama and his aides did not want to get caught up in a right out of the chute when the Tea Party folks seem to have a lot of momentum in a big clash with them over the 2011 budget. I think they thought that the public was on their side in terms of the need to cut. So they really were holding back while Democrats on the Hill were saying, you're not going after the 2011 budget cuts, and deficit hawks at the Washington Post editorial page, and even some with centrist Democrats are saying, you're not doing much on deficit reduction. They wanted the Ryan plan out there first so they could respond and say, listen, this is what this is the pure Republican position: tax breaks for the wealthy, cuts to social spending, and we have a different view. We believe in deficit reduction, but we believe that there should be some cuts, but we also believe in investments. Remember, winning the future. We don't want to just throw the engine out of the airplane to save money. That will not help us over the long journey. And I think in the end, it led to a lot of bitter bruises over the balanced budget. Remember, there was the budget fight. Remember, there was almost a government shutdown. And this all sort of led to the debt ceiling fight. And my book, Showdown, I go into the White House and describe all the meetings they're having and why and the concessions they're making to the Republicans to sort of win the narrative, which I think at the time looked like they were losing. It looked like they were reaffirming the Republican mantra of the only thing we need to do to fix the economy is cut government.
You think it was more complicated than that?
It was much more complicated.
They were laying a more complicated trap.
They were trying to relay a more complicated message that yes, we must cut, yes, we must invest, yes, we have to do something about entitlements, but we also have to have the rich pay more to deal with the long-term deficit issues. And at the end of the debt ceiling tussle, which was ugly and people don't want to relive that, although I think I have a lot of good stories about it in the book, it looked like the president's numbers were low and the Republican congressional numbers were even lower, and everybody hated Washington. The market tanked. The bond rating for the U.S. government got a negative rating from Standards and Poor. But I think out of those ashes, the president was in a better position to rebuild and make his case, which he did with the jobs bill, with the payroll tax cut fight, and said, I have a vision and values that are different from the Republicans. And I think he ended up winning that message tussle in a very ugly way, but in a way for him was beneficial because it set up this election that we're having right now as whether you want to go back to the most hard-hearted supply-side economics, deregulation, back to the, let businesses write their own rules pre-2008 versus his vision of a more regulated economy, shared sacrifice, and investments that help the middle class and tax cuts that help low-income Americans.
Now, my guest, David Korn, Washington bureau chief for Mother Jones, obviously no fan of the Ryan budget. Tomorrow, we're going to have a supporter of the Ryan budget, and we're going to go into detail on what was released yesterday, and that supporter will take your calls. So we will definitely do it from that side and do it from that side in detail. David Korn's book is called Showdown, the inside story of how Obama fought back against Boehner, Cantor, and the Tea Party. And we can take a few phone calls for him, 212-433-WNYC. 212-433-9692. Any of your first reactions to the Ryan budget, a major long-term budget reform plan, including Medicare reform plan for the United States, as well as a major campaign platform document for 2012. Mitt Romney has endorsed it, at least generally already. So if he's the nominee, then there's going to be the Romney-Ryan budget, and you know you're going to hear that in Obama commercials, if nothing else. 212-433-WNYC if you want to join the conversation. So on the 2011 scorecard,
right?
I think the conventional wisdom is that Obama lost the debt ceiling politics because he looked ineffectual, but that the Republicans, the Tea Party, lost the December showdown on extending the payroll tax cut. And I think that took a lot of air out of the Tea Party's balloon.
Right.
So how do you see it?
And I'd go back even further to set up the dynamic. 2010 Election Day is sort of the nadir of the Obama presidency. They lose 63 seats in the House, and it's worse than they expected. And the next morning, there's a scene in my book, the next morning, the president comes into his meeting with his senior staff, and everybody is, as you could expect, really down and depressed. And they're expecting they're going to have 2 years of investigations and subpoenas from House Republicans looking to do anything to tie them down and trip them up. The president comes in and says, we have a lame duck session. We have 8 weeks here in which, maybe more like 6 weeks, in which we're going to get a tax cut deal. We're going to repeal Don't Ask, Don't Tell. We're going to ratify the nuclear New START treaty. We're going to get this children's nutrition bill that Michelle wants. We're going to push for the DREAM Act and a few other things. And everyone in the room is looking at him like he's nuts. What does he see that we don't see? They're all thinking. And by God, he was right. He had a vision that he had a limited opportunity to make all this sort of legislative headway, realizing that once the Tea Party Republicans took control of the House in January 2011, that would all be gone. So he worked hard. He probably had the most efficient, effective, successful legislative 6 weeks, maybe in the annals of U.S. history.
In that lame duck session.
In that lame duck session. But then you get back to the 2011 fight. Okay, the Republicans now control the House. There's a fight over the budget. There's a fight over the debt ceiling. And the president looks like he's conceding. He's giving in. And the debt ceiling thing, he can't get them to do what Republicans and Democrats have traditionally done, just raise the debt ceiling and not tie it to other battles, not hold the public and the president hostage. At the end, he kind of wins a small front of that in that he prevents them. There's some these dramatic moments in White House meetings with Republicans, which I get into in the book, in which he tells them, we are not going to do this again. Because the Republicans are talking about doing this in 6 months, a year, several times before the next election. He said, I will, you know, do your worst. The founders of this nation, the framers of our Constitution, did not envision a situation in which you could hold, Congress could hold the White House hostage by not paying the nation's bills that Congress itself had racked up.
So
he kind of won in that regard.
Go ahead and shut down the government.
Not shut down the government. Go in and have a financial crisis. And, you know, think of Greece, but 1,000 times bigger. And the Republicans ended up backing down on that point. But everybody looked bad. And it wasn't so much the payroll tax cut fight at the end of the year, I think, that put the president back on track. It was the jobs bill. Within weeks after this, in fact, days after this, he calls Gene Sperling into his office. Gene is head of the National Economic Council, his chief economic advisor. He says, I want a jobs bill. And you know what? I don't want it trimmed. I want it to be as bold as it realistically can be. And in meetings, he kept telling his aides, who were sort of making it smaller to see if they could get it passed, he said, no, tell me what you think we should do. Within realistic parameters, but not about what you think we could pass, because I don't think he thought the Republicans would pass anything, mm-hmm. any part of it. So he wanted to show the public what he would do if he could. And then he went barnstorming. North Carolina, Virginia, Texas, New Hampshire. You might know many of these swing states for the jobs bill talk jobs, jobs, jobs. He couldn't get it past the obstructionists on the Hill, the Republicans, but it did set up that payroll tax cut fight at the end of the year when the House Republicans ended up being chastised by Senate Republicans and by John McCain and Newt Gingrich and others who thought that they were completely shooting themselves in the foot.
Because they wouldn't even accept keeping a tax cut in place.
For the middle class.
And they're supposed to be the party of the tax cuts.
Yes.
So that they could fight the president.
They were revealed to believe that only tax breaks for the rich do anything for the economy. A premise that a lot of people don't believe to begin with, but that tax breaks for the middle class aren't important. And so I think by the end of the year, you know, the president had totally gotten the better of them. And that was what he needed to do to sort of set up the campaign narrative that we're now going through.
David Korn, Mother Jones, Washington Bureau Chief, author now of Showdown, the inside story of how Obama fought back against Boehner, Cantor and the Tea Party. And Peter in the Bronx, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Yes, hi. One little side question and then the main question. In these Republican and Democratic budget proposals, are they taking into account revenues, the loss of revenues that would come because nobody has any money to buy anything? But the main question I have is in terms of what you're presenting. I'm wondering, was this a long-range plan by Obama as opposed to pragmatic dealing with issues as they come? You know, I'm wondering whether you're reading more intention into it than there really was. So are there any conversations between people in the administration regarding, you know, if we do this, this will happen and that'll put us in a better position?
Right. Was there really 2 years of strategy in Obama's thinking or more reacting to events? Because he did have the image of reacting sort of, I don't know if haphazardly is the right word, but being a reactor rather than a generator of the political narrative.
Yeah. In doing this book, or after doing this book, a lot of interviewers, you know, ask the cliched question, Brian's better than this, so he hasn't yet, which is, were you surprised by anything? You spent a year reporting this book, talking to Obama insiders. Were you surprised by anything? And really, to me, the amount of strategy and steadiness that I found in the president did indeed, I'm not sure surprise was the right word, but kind of impressed me. I know that at the end of the lame duck session, he was looking to 2011 in very long-range strategic terms. He knew they had to deal with the budget. He knew they had to deal with the debt ceiling. And I think he and the people around him underestimated just how ugly and how long and drawn out it would be. But he knew that they had to be taken care of. He knew there would be no other major legislating going on during the year. So it was all about setting up this clash in visions and values that we now see present. So I do think that there was a long-range view. And I do think in looking at the president, whether you look at his economic policies, when he talks about winning the future, which is kind of, I think, a cliched catchphrase, but if you look at the policies underneath it, it really is about setting up the nation for economic competition, not just in the years, but the decades ahead. And if you look at his foreign policy decision-making on Egypt and Libya, I think he's really looking down the road to what to fundamental tectonic changes that may be happening in the Arab world and figuring out how to deal with that while dealing with the, you know, with the crises of the moment. So I was very impressed by the amount of long-range planning and thinking. Didn't always go, I'm not saying everything went according to what they thought, but I think generally, at least in the last year, it did, although the proof will be November 12th.
Absolutely, and there's a long way until that. So we're just about out of time. Then we're going to talk next about the Trayvon Martin case with Ta-Nehisi Coates from The Atlantic. But now we have the new Ryan budget unveiled yesterday to turn Medicare into a voucher system and et cetera. Here is Ryan from Wisconsin, the budget committee chairman yesterday.
And so if we have a difference of opinion with the president, the direction he and the Senate leaders have taken the country, which we do, we feel morally bound to offer a choice.
Even if, he says, that choice is going to be politically unpopular. So my question to you going out the door is, The subtitle of your book is How Obama Fought Back Against Boehner, Cantor, and the Tea Party. Yeah. You don't mention Paul Ryan, who it seems is becoming a huge ideological star, as well as perhaps the central philosophical player.
Well, Ryan is in the book. It's just the subtitle could only be so long. It's kind of long already.
He's very much in the book.
But they are the Republicans, and you know, I'm kind of impressed by this, are united around what I think many would say, including Republicans, is a sharp ideological platform. The House Republicans were howling last year about the response to the Medicare provisions. I mean, I have, you know, a scene in the book where House Republicans come to the president and basically plead with him to stop the attacks on their Medicare provisions. Mm-hmm. And when he gave his speech in April, saying that they had a dark, pessimistic vision of the world, according to Ryan's budget, they screamed foul, and they said that was unfair, let alone all the things that they had attacked him on in the previous 2 years. So I think this is a very strong ideological fight, and I think, less thinking about the president's vision, he saw it coming. He knew that they would, you know, the Tea Partiers would be in control and the Republicans would not be out there compromising with him, but putting forward a very stark plan that would give him and the Democrats an opening for resurgence.
You're really saying a principled Obama versus a principled Ryan Romney or Ryan whoever for the fall, that's where we're in for the next 8 months.
I think it's a big clash of values, a fight for the soul of America, as Mitt Romney himself has said.
David Korn, Washington Bureau Chief for Mother Jones, author now of Showdown, the inside story of how Obama fought back against Boehner, Cantor, and the Tea Party. Thank you very much.
Oh, thank you so much, Brian.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up next, Ta-Nehisi Coates from The Atlantic on the Trayvon Martin killing and Florida's right to pursue law. Stay with us.